Hey, welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Today, I want to talk to you guys about service intervals and how often you should get your watch serviced. So I'm sure I've probably answered this either on Instagram or Facebook or maybe even in the podcast several episodes ago, but I keep getting this recurring question in terms of service intervals. The question generally comes along the lines of, you know, how often should I service my watch? If I don't wear my watches, do I need a service? Or, you know, somewhere along the lines of saying, how often should I service my watch? And it's honestly not a bad question. And I feel like it's something that probably needs to warrant a little bit more of a further explanation than my usual simple response. So usually when people message me on Instagram or whatnot, it's kind of hard to constantly repeat the same thing over and over again. So I usually say around 4 to 7 years. Okay, so if you read my book, 100 Plus No BS Watch Tips, you'll see the info inside. Okay, so I explain furthermore, I explain in a more detailed manner, in a way where you can kind of quickly get the gist of it. But one of the biggest things was one of the interviews here that I've got, actually. So I'll give you a perfect example. So I had someone send me this question, quote unquote, right? Nobody likes to send in his or her watch for service if it's ticking along nicely. Let's assume you have reached the recommended service period. An example, 10 years for the newer Rolex models. Should you immediately break into sweat and tears and send it out? Or if it ain't broke, don't fix it. This comes from a fellow friend, Atelier de Griff, right? Long story short, I'll answer this in gist, right? So let's start off with saying there's two schools of thoughts. One school of thought is to have it serviced within the service interval, and the next school of thought is if it isn't broke, don't fix it. And both schools of thought are right, okay? And I'll give you a quick answer here if you just want to end the podcast. If it's a modern watch, get it serviced if it's when it breaks. If it's a vintage watch or if it's in-house movement, you probably want to get it serviced within the service interval. So that's that. You can end the episode right here now if you just want the quick, easy answer, okay? If you want to hear the detailed answer, here we are, right? So for more modern watches, for the most part, let's start from the beginning, okay? Back in the days, we used to use animal oils. Animal oils, over a period of time, would eventually gum up. When the animal oils gum up, your watch stops. So, if your watch stopped, that means your watch no longer ran and you needed to get it serviced. So, when your oils would gum up and your watch stops, you have no choice but to bring it in for service, and so on and so forth. This is also one of the reasons why a lot of the older vintage watches are so well preserved, because of this animal oil. They used to use sperm whale oil, in the sense that it was fatty, it was oily, and over a period of time, when it oxidizes and with the introduction of oxygen and everything like that, sooner or later, the oils will gum up. Okay, now as we made technological advances in the decades to come from then, we now have something called synthetic oil, where the oils are more of a manufactured splice and dice, chemical reactions, etc., right, to the point where we have what we call synthetic oils. Long story short, it's no longer natural, it's no longer it still has some components of, you know, animal oil and whatnot, but not to that degree of way back then. Most of the oils we use today is synthetic, okay? Now, the problem with synthetic is that it's great. It meets a lot of the criterias of what we want in a watch lubricant. The problem with synthetic oil, though, is that over a period of time, it doesn't gum up. Instead, it evaporates. So, if your synthetic oil evaporated over a period of time, your watch will still run. It won't stop. As compared to back in the days, if you had a vintage watch and it wasn't vintage then, but it's vintage now. If you had a vintage watch and it was lubricated with animal oil, over a period of time, the oil would gum up. So the watch would stop running. In today's time, with synthetic oils, over a period of time, synthetic oils do not gum up. Instead, they evaporate. Now, when it evaporates, you have no idea. You don't know when, you don't know how, and eventually, when it does dry up, the watch is still running because it's not gumming up or anything like that. With animal oils, when it gums up, it literally locks in the pivots. It literally just like stops the pivots from moving, everything comes to a screeching halt. It's not moving, period. With synthetic oils, the oils would eventually evaporate, so on and so forth, and the pivots will still run, but now the problem is that it's running dry. It's running dry within the jewels, it's running dry within the caps, it's just running dry in and of itself. That's the problem. So, with modern watches, right? Actually, let me backtrack a little bit more. When it dries up and the pivots are still running, what you gotta remember is that the ruby is stronger than the pivot. So, the problem now lies when you're rubbing the pivot against the ruby dry, right? You're gonna have some friction. You're gonna have a lot of friction now because there's no more oils to make it run smooth. So when it has increased friction, expect your amplitude of your watch to go down. That's one, right? Two, over a period of time, that pivot will eventually start to shave. It will start to shear. And when it starts to shear, you're going to start getting some debris and dirt build up. You're going to have shards of the metal start building up. And that's how you're going to slowly start to get a lot of the debris and the shards from the metal flaking. Right? Now, when that starts to occur, that's when shit hits the fan. Okay, when that starts to occur, that it bounces everywhere, it gets into every little crevice of the movement. Now all of this happens without you once even batting an eye. You won't know the difference, you won't even feel the difference, you can't even tell. You might realize that your watch is running a little bit slow, a little bit fast, it's up to you. Or hell, you might not even notice your watch running slow or fast, it might be even keeping on time, right? But the problem is that this is all occurring internally, right? Whether you like it or not. So as the pivots start to shave and break, eventually the pivots will snap, right? In more modern watches, when it snaps, we can replace it. So that's not a problem. It should usually be covered in your service. If it's not, then usually you'll get like a separate bill kind of for movement parts and whatnot. So that's usually easy for modern watches, okay? So you can kind of see that if it's not broken, don't fix it when it comes to modern watches because we can still get these parts. When it comes to vintage watches, that's a little different story because now, for the most part, most people servicing vintage watches are using synthetic oils. So it's not going to gum up. So when it comes to vintage watches, if you don't get it serviced and we're using synthetic oils, over a period of time, the watch will still run. And you won't know. So what this effectively does is when it continues running and the synthetic oils actually already evaporated, you don't know and you won't ever know until you bring it in for service. So let's just say you have a vintage watch and you wear it for 10 plus years. Long story short, once the synthetic oils evaporates, the same exact thing like I detailed earlier occurs. You know, the pivots will start running dry on the jewels, shearing begins to happen, flakes start to appear, shards start to appear, debris start to build up, and sooner or later, the pivots and the parts will break. And when this happens, it's not a pretty sight for you financially and or economically, right? So for the most part, when vintage watches start to break, when parts in a vintage watch start to break, you are SOL. So when you bring your watch into a watchmaker for servicing, if they find that there needs to be parts that need to be replaced, or if they need to create a part or they need to look for a part, your price for a service dramatically go up. And that's if they can find the part. Now, if they can find the part, they might relay that cost onto you, and hey, maybe it's not as expensive as we're saying it is. But, and I say huge but, if it doesn't work, if it doesn't work out in the sense that if they can't find the part, you, my friend, will eat the brunt of the force if they have to create the part. Creating the part is not easy. Creating parts for watches, micromechanic-wise, it's not easy. It's the romantic side of watchmaking where us watchmakers actually get to, you know, fabricate and measure and detail, use algorithms, use formulas to figure out the teeth, the pinion, the size, the measurements, and everything. So anyone that's worth their weight in salt should not be charging cheap, and it's not cheap to create parts. So if someone's saying that they're creating a part for like $20, for the most part, you expect someone modifying a part to make it, you know, fit into your watch. Usually, if they have to create a part, you might be looking at several hundred, maybe even a couple thousand. Who knows, okay? It depends on what part is being made. I've seen watchmakers create pallet forks for a couple thousands. I've seen watchmakers create balance wheels. I've seen watchmakers create a bunch of stuff. But for the most part, it's not cheap. And I'm telling this right now, for a vintage watch, you need to assess your goals. Which is why, for vintage watches and in-house movements, I recommend getting it serviced when it needs to be serviced, if you are wearing it daily. If you're getting a vintage watch, if you're wearing your vintage watch maybe once a week or once a month, once every 2 months, maybe we can have a little bit more leeway. But lately, with the whole vintage craze, I see a lot more people and a lot more people wearing more vintage watches, and they're not servicing it. They're treating it like a modern watch. You know, they're treating it like a modern watch in the sense that they wear it every day. They kind of beat it up a little bit. And you gotta remember, a lot of these vintage watches are not meant to kind of uphold. It's not meant to sustain that amount of impact as opposed to modern watches today. So just keep that in mind. Now, I'm not saying it's an end-all be-all, but for the most part, vintage watches are what I'd be very careful of when it comes to service intervals. Now, you notice that I said in-house movements as well, okay? Now, in-house movements are a little different story in the sense that in-house movements are still relatively modern, correct? So these parts are available. But the biggest problem with in-house movements is that you are subject to the manufacturer's price points. So you can't price shop for in-house movements. So let's say you have an in-house movement XYZ, and manufacturer XYZ says the only way you can get the service from us is if we charge you $2,000. For the most part, most people would like to have different options. So when manufacturer XYZ says, hey, this is $2,000, take it or leave it, and you have no opportunity, no freedom to price shop because manufacturer XYZ holds all the parts. And that's what a lot of these brands and a lot of these manufacturers today have done in the sense that their in-house movements, they don't give out parts. So for the most part, a lot of these in-house movements, a lot of these brands and manufacturers, they keep all these in-house movement parts in-house in the sense that they don't sell to third-party independent watchmakers because they want to see the faults that come in. They want to see if there's any mistakes, if they want to see if there's any manufacturing errors. So they want to see all that in-house first. And it's going to be a... excuse me. Oh, man, furball. It's going to be a long period of time before we actually see manufacturers release these parts accounts, especially with Swatch Group, Rolex, etc. I highly doubt that that it's going to happen anytime soon. But another thing you want to pay attention to is what if the in-house movement manufacturer goes out of business? And that's a big, big issue. So the way you should see it is, it's not like your regular ETA watch where you can bring to a regular third-party independent watchmaker and they can get it repaired and you can price shop. When it comes to in-house movements, you have to get it. You have to get it serviced by the manufacturer. So what if you pass it on to your child? What if what if 40, 50 years later, you hand that watch down as an heirloom or you just give it as a gift? Now the person you give it to has a in-house movement watch that not many people in the world have, which is nice, and it has that limited collectivity, right? But the biggest problem now is the brand or manufacturer that you're buying it from sustainable? Is it long term? Is it something that they will still be around in 50 years? Or is it something that maybe the new CEO after 20 years nixes it, right? And that's happened before, guys. I really hope you guys understand that. There's been watches out there that have come out, and they're manufacturer specific. So not many other watchmakers or not many other manufacturers have access to that. And give or take, maybe a decade later, the manufacturer closes down because of profits. And look, it's real. This is real. And I just want to point that out to you. And maybe this is a side of in-house manufacturers that isn't really often spoken about. If you read my book, I kind of go in on this a little bit more. But for the most part, that's what you have to be careful of. And why I recommend getting your in-house movement serviced within the service interval is because you don't want parts to break and be subjected to the manufacturer's higher demands for movement parts. So let's just say your movement service costs about, $900. Let's just say, right, $900. Now, it's $900 for the movement service, just the movement service. But what if you haven't worn it for, 14 years and you have a lot of broken parts in there? And look at that. You bring it to the manufacturer to get it serviced, and the manufacturer's like, look, you got broken parts here. We need to replace them. And replacing these parts are going to be an additional $500. Or, maybe they can go $900. Who knows? But the point is that you are subjected to the manufacturer only, which means you can't say no. If you say no, you have a watch that's not working, and no one else can service it. And that's the issue I have kind of when it comes to in-house movements today. So hopefully this answers and this gives you guys a little bit more clarification in terms of how often you should get your watch serviced. I know I get this question recurred a lot. If you know someone who can benefit from this episode, guys, please share this with them. If you haven't given a rating on iTunes or whichever podcast listener you guys are listening on right this moment, please do so. It means the world to me, and it only helps us get better. For the most part, guys, if you have any questions, please send them in. You can reach me at Facebook, Instagram, and I believe YouTube as well. So for the most part, guys, hope you guys have a wonderful, wonderful Labor Day weekend, okay? And hope you guys take care.